Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weva, and alongside me, as always, is Spencer, not a good enough villain to have his own name, William.
That is so rude on so many levels. I don't want to talk to you for the rest of this podcast.
Well, you don't have much choice because you have to. We got a great show in store for you as we're going to be talking about the recently dropped anime film in theaters right now, My Hero Academia Heroes Rising. And the great thing is we're not alone. The burp you just heard right now came from one of our closest friends, Mr. Tyler. How's it going, Tyler?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me tonight. I apologize for the burp. The hot dogs in the theater were amazing.
That's disgusting. Great. So we got a great show in store to talk about. And you know what? We cannot wait to get into it. Right, Spence?
Yeah. But before that, tune in each and every Wednesday morning on your favorite stream platform and over on our website at filmlosophers.com and connect with us on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got over 200 and a lot of episodes. I just know we're over like 200. We're at like 208. This is at less than 208 right now.
Yeah. So 200 and something.
We're over 200 and something. Check out all those episodes at filmlosophers.com. as well as all the regular streaming platforms. But, of course, we're not here to talk about streaming. We're here to talk about anime. Yes. And we are going to be talking about My Hero Academia Heroes Rising. This has been a movie that's been in the making for a little bit of time. In fact, it's been on the mindset of the creator himself of the storyline for a while. And it's just one of those types of films where, you know, you can't just watch and not be engaged. Like, we came in here and Tyler was already wearing the All Might sweater while we were walking
yes.
in.
The most amazing of all heroes. It's like they took Captain America and Superman and just put them into one amazing hero.
And then made Amazing.
Yeah.
There well, we go. We're missing the key component.
Yes.
We're not gonna tell Mr. Horikoshi that, okay? Just so we'll leave that out of the But we got a chance to check out the latest film in theaters, and needless to say, the table is a little divided, and this is going to be a very interesting conversation. So before we move any further, Spencer, give us that official synopsis goodness.
Class 1A visits Naboo Island, where they finally get to do some real hero work. The place is so peaceful, it's more like a vacation, until they're attacked by a villain with an unfathomable quirk. His power is eerily familiar, and it looks like Shigaraki has had a...
Shigaraki.
Whatever. I can never say his name.
Shigaraki,
it is so hard.
Whatever.
Shigaraki.
Had a hand in the plan. But with All Might retired and the citizens' lives on the line, there's no time for questions. Deku and his friends are the next generation of hero, and they're the island's only hope.
That's right. Directed by Kenji Nagasaki. The film stars so many people. I didn't even put all the names in there because there's literally so many names, both American English dubbing and the Japanese voice cast. So, like, from Justin Brimmer to Dekai Yamashita to Nobuhiko Okamoto to, like, there's literally tons of names. I could go through all of them, but we'd probably be here until the end of the episode.
I'm amazed you got through those names
to
begin with. That
I
was
mean,
good.
I didn't say, what did he say? Shinobu
Shigaraki.
Shigaraki.
Like, I hear it and then I forget it instantly.
Like, and it looks like Shashimi had a plan for sushi the whole time. This is one of those interesting movies where the unique aspect that it takes is very peculiar because essentially this film was thought to technically be the series finale. The creator that we were mentioning earlier, Horikoshi, actually had this in mind when he was considering to close out the series. However, because of the fact that the entire series has gained so much fame and notoriety, it's just become this like immense, you know, snowball of anime awesomeness. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I watch this show pretty religiously. Like, I have my access to Funimation.
Same.
You know,
same.
However, here's the other one. Who is actually caught up?
I am not caught up. I am only up to the point that Hulu has dubbed for season 3. But I am aware of Overhaul, so.
And you?
And they have captured Overhaul, and I am a few
episodes
behind.
Bro.
Whatever.
Oh, yeah?
They're going to just let him run around and not bother.
And then they kill Overhaul. So talk about spoilers.
Double spoilers, bro.
Which, if that's any indication, this is a spoiler-filled review. So we will be talking about things that may or may not, you know, give away key points of the film. But, I mean...
It's in theaters. Today's the last day. The day this comes out. So, yeah. You've got hours.
So you have your opportunity. Go watch it now.
You're going to have to essentially wait until it comes out on video.
Yeah.
Or buy it on digital or whatever. But yeah, this story was essentially supposed to be the series finale to the anime, considering how big of a threat the main antagonist was compared to All for One, which the main antagonist's name was Nine, which stood for the nine different types, spoiler. The nine different kinds of quirks that he could steal.
Is that really a spoiler, though? Even as I was sitting in the theater, when I first heard that name, Nine, the instant I heard Nine, I right away put it to their quirks. That's the first thing I tagged that to was his quirk.
I mean, they could have been creative with it and could have been like, oh, they steal like your body for 9 minutes or can... Whatever, or
they can.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can interpret it, but I mean, it is kind of on the nose. I mean, you bring in somebody who's supposed to be the massive OP superhero. I mean, villain, supervillain.
One is kind of on the nose too,
right?
All's the quirks for me.
I mean, I guess we're finding the trend when it comes to My Hero is that if with their villain names, you can kind of tell what's about to happen with
or
them.
You can't pronounce them at all. Like that's the line.
Like Shishi.
Yeah.
Shishirumi.
Shishoshomi.
It also could have ended Deku's story of how he became the number one hero. So the film ultimately had several options to go about. Thankfully, it does not act as a series finale, but more so as an homage, not so much homage, but a great example of the type of story that's been developed thus far.
Kind of just them flexing their abilities with storytelling and,
exactly.
And visuals.
And mind you, yes. I'll get into that in a second. But the budget for this film was at $141 million. The worldwide box office for its entirety came out to around $25 million, which isn't bad, seeing as they're still going to be doing more screenings all over the rest of the place, not to mention the other individual sales for digital, the people who are going to be buying, you know, all the toys and whatnot. I mean, there's still revenue to be had. So, I mean, I know I'm going to probably be buying this on digital.
Well, on top of that, I think there'd be a difference if, you know, America showings had more than a couple a day for only a week. You know, give us some time. Give us a couple of weeks to really get it.
I agree. I think that's a really big point to be had for, like, a lot of these movies because of the fact that they are on such a... Oh, I take that back. The domestic box office was $1.7 billion.
What?
That's what it says.
It said it made that much?
Yeah.
Hold on. How much did it cost to make again?
140 mil.
And then it's brought in 1.7 billion?
Yep.
And when you say domestic, are you talking about Japan
that's
domestic?
Just,
or
I think America that's domestic? That. Think that's just American
what?
Domestic.
What? How did it make $1 billion in 7 days?
People because love My Hero.
Exactly.
That is crazy.
I mean, if you limit something enough to where it's like, all right, well, we're not going to give everybody the option to see it all the time, but you have these amount of days to see it, and this is such a great movie that everybody who went to the press screenings, which everybody that I know that was at a press screening for this film in L.A., mm-hmm. ranted and raved about it, loved it, sent everybody who was a fan of My Hero into like a tizzy and made them essentially go and see it several times. I mean, how many times did you guys see it?
Two. Unfortunately, one.
Really?
Today is the last day, and this is the day I got.
And you saw it twice?
Yes.
I only saw it once. I wanted to see it twice, but I didn't get a chance to. But, I mean, we contributed. That's already, what, four tickets here?
Yeah.
So
see, I would have done more, especially because I would have liked to have gone into a greater depth of getting to see what was going on. Right now, I just have my base, what I just literally watched.
Yeah. On second viewing of this movie, I feel better about it.
Well, okay. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because here's the funny thing, and I don't know if he had mentioned
it to
you, Tyler.
I'm going to cut you off and tell you exactly what happened.
Eddie, as usual, got me
all riled up, and then I
was
upset.
It was the greatest thing ever.
No.
Like, I wish I could have had a recording device on my phone to capture that conversation, because this is how this conversation went. We were talking, and it was Thursday. It was a Thursday night, and I said, Spence, did you get a chance to see the movie? He goes, yeah. I go, what'd you think? He goes, I don't know, whatever.
I was upset.
I'm like, okay. He goes, yeah, it just had me frustrated. I'm like, okay. Well, okay, and we started talking about it, and then he goes, yeah, I'm supposed to see it again with Tyler this weekend, but I don't know. And I said, well, you do know that it's not canon, right?
See, I actually, real quick, I would have believed you too. I would have believed that.
Well,
just
see,
after watching this movie, the first thing I thought is, like, this is one of those, just like Dragon Ball Z, right? They had the main storyline.
Yeah.
And then the movies were always outside of that main storyline. Where would they fit in the timeline? This, I honestly straight up would have believed you on that. And
well,
probably would have been just as
well.
Annoying.
Technically, like, Funimation said, okay, it's not canon. Like, it was part of their, like, things to know about the film or whatever. They did it on TikTok or whatever. But I told them that. There had to have been at least a 25-second pause in that conversation of dead silence, and all I heard was Spencer say, what?
And then the Spencer rage built.
And the Spencer rage just unfoiled on that
Spencer
call. Like, why the heck then? Why are we watching? Oh, and I can imagine, like, right now, this is an audio podcast. You can't really see it, but I, in that moment on the phone, I could swear I could see Spencer waving his arms from all the way where I was.
Or hitting something on his bed, or throwing something, or
no,
just in general
Spencer
rage.
The worst part was, like, while I was on the phone with you, I was playing a multiplayer game, and I was losing badly, so I was already
just the double hit there.
Yeah, it was a bad night.
I mean, it was so great, because talking to him and letting him know this, and then, like, telling him, and then hearing him just fully break down over the phone over My Hero Academia. Like, well, what the heck? Why the heck did I even see it? What the heck? What's going on?
That's exactly what I said. I was so...
And you know, the worst part is I wasn't even a part of that conversation.
No.
But I could completely imagine his reactions.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. Like, at a certain point, I'm like, I'm done with this. And I went to bed after I got off the phone.
You're not supposed to go to bed angry, first and foremost.
And I knew he was just going to shut down, because, like, towards the tail end of that conversation, like, Spence, you okay?
You need a hug, buddy?
And he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Fine.
No, it's always the short answers with him. When he answers with you shortly.
Okay, we don't need to get into the psychology of Spencer.
I'm just saying.
So, it was great to have that moment, and then talking to him afterwards and be like, you know, we're going to have to probably talk about this, because, like, we're just going to have to, like, really dig into, like, what the heck happened in that phone call. He's like, no, we really don't.
No, when he asked that,
I do
want to
know. I do want to know.
Oh, and we're going to talk about it. We're definitely going to talk about it.
We'll get to that point, I guess.
As this conversation, obviously, like I said before, is spoiler-filled, so we are not going to hold back. We are not going to... we're not going to hide. We're going to divulge and discuss. And starting with expectations, jumping into this film, obviously, the bigger expectations that one can have. I know for me, I had just recently seen the Two Heroes film.
Mm-hmm.
And Two Heroes film was absolutely great. I loved it. It was great. I thought it was interesting how it turned into, like, it started out as like this silo of a situation, and then it just began to build and build and build until it ultimately became like what you were expecting with, you know, a My Hero, either episode or grand movie. And I thought the plot twist in the movie, The Two Heroes, was incredible. I was like, that was good. And so coming into this, I honestly expected that level of not only story writing, but like action and emotion, like the evocation of what I've seen. Like I cannot, I'm going to admit it right here. I cannot get through almost every episode of My Hero without having to choke back like some kind of emotion. I'm like, get it.
Then you, I must be a lot tougher than you because I will straight up cry during almost each and every single episode of My Hero. No. I was crying just roughly, what, maybe 2.5 hours ago during that movie, and also trying to tell the kids in front of me to be quiet because
he gets it. Hear
what they're saying up there, and I'm trying to cry to it.
I go to the movies with two people who shush children.
That's right. I paid for this movie. Yes. I'm not going to have them ruin that experience. What's wrong with them?
Listen, I've been watching anime a lot longer than they have. I deserve it more than they do. They can sit back and be quiet.
Just because they got the toys don't mean they know how it works. That's it.
Exactly.
What a bunch of old men.
Who love anime. Get it right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So my fullest expectation was like the level of excellence that's already been set. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, there's already this bar for me that's like so high up here that I wasn't too sure if they were going to hit it. Because for me, most of the time, movies like this don't always hit that mark. Right, like they don't hit lightning in a bottle twice.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, the first movie was fantastic. At least I have the first movie. It's going to be great. And I'm like, this movie has to be great, but if not, at least I still have the first one. That's what I thought. So right. that was literally like my basic mindset. But yeah, I was really hoping, but I had that like sense of concern of like, all right, if it isn't, it's on Amazon right now. The first movie's on Amazon, so
that's right.
I can go home and self-soothe. So what about you, Tyler? What were some of your expectations coming into the movie before seeing it?
So I have to admit, back when I started watching My Hero, I was instantly a fan of it. However, I wasn't too over the top. It wasn't until All Might fought Nomu that everything for me from that moment went, it has to be here or else it's not grand at all. It doesn't have anything. So going into the first movie that we mentioned earlier, I thought the same exact thing. It has to be that level of fight with Nomu. All Might's got to bring that kind of attention, that spirit that he has. Deku's got to bring it. You know, the rest of Class 1A has to bring it. I went into this movie with the highest of expectations from them that, you know, if I'm not crying, cheering, and slightly concerned for the lives of 15-year-old children, then it's just not up to par. And
well,
it, yeah, I mean, just damn.
Well, I mean,
it went over.
Yeah, and I can definitely agree with that because I think for me, I don't know if, and I'm gonna probably say something that's probably gonna hurt a lot of people's feelings.
That's nothing new.
No, it's not. But
a frequent occasion for Spencer. Don't,
yeah. Oh, several times over. Mm. I don't think the modern format of anime holds up to what we grew up with. In terms of anime.
Two old men.
No. Real quick. I've got to agree with him, though.
I mean,
got to agree with him. Our premise for anime was way simpler, an easier breakdown. You wait for Goku. Pikachu has to fire up. You know, those type of things. We knew those things coming. This, to me, is different. It's evolving.
Yeah.
It's becoming more. You know, all the time I'm not 100% sure of how I'm supposed to even feel. Should I lighten up? Is this a serious moment? Is Bakugo going to yell murder at somebody and then just start blasting? And, you know, it's evolving.
And I mean, even looking at things like, well, and even in terms of things, I've been trying to reconnect with a lot of older stuff. Like, I've been on this huge kick of rewatching all of Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, I'm doing
so
that too.
So amazing.
Like, seriously, 1999. How could I not have recognized the host of Toonami was Spike?
Oh,
like,
no. It's so wild how much you don't notice as a kid. Because like, when I heard that voice, I was like, whoa.
Yeah. And I'm like, the host of Toonami is the guy who did the voice of Spike for the English dubbing. I'm like, Okay, I mean, cool, but
it makes more sense on why Tom's exit was bang.
Yeah.
Now to me,
yeah.
At first, I was like, okay, but I'm like,
it's not tricky, tricky. but I don't know. Like for us, growing up with things like Akira and Ghost in the Shell and original Dragon Ball. And
Fist of the North Star.
Exactly.
Paranoia Agent.
Paranoia Whoa. Agent. All these things that really kind of, I don't even know if like the simpler is the best way to put it, but just it seemed more, I don't know, it's kind of like for me the difference between modern Disney and Renaissance era Disney.
Mm. Right.
Like there's a significant difference, and yes, Renaissance era Disney, they had their lows as well as their highs, just like with, you know, with with, you know, a lot of with anime at the time and so forth, you know, but I just have to say there's like those gems and you don't really see that quite often in modern anime, but then you find things like My Hero and My Hero feels like it could have been either in the 80s, 90s, you know, even till today, and it would have fit perfectly.
Yeah.
I think it would have been like it's that accessible.
Well, I think it's just the ability for it to sort of evolve with the characters. You have such a large scope of characters. They're constantly evolving, growing, asking themselves what they need to do. And that's what we all always do.
Yeah.
Right? We don't wait for Goku to come save our lives. We try to pick ourselves up and do something better with them. That's what they do in the show. That's what you're watching.
Yeah.
That's how I interpreted it, at least.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, especially since like this movie jumps forward in time slightly. And like even with a slight jump forward, you can still see it in the characters that they're different than they are in the show currently.
There's a slight time difference, but it's not really. Yeah, I could see that slightly. It's not a big time difference, but
yeah, is it a small jump?
It's a slight jump. I mean,
Are we talking weeks to months to years?
Well, Bakugo and what's his name? They have their provisional licenses, which currently in the series they're still. They're still going to training to get their provisional license.
So or, at least a few months out.
Give or take. Yeah. Right now, so both of you are out of the loop, but right now they're doing the Spring Festival.
Yes.
In the series. So that's what's currently happening.
Spring Festival, that means that's like almost half a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how far you guys are back.
Okay.
Well, I'm working too. On it. I'm working with on us. It.
I'm up to date. I've seen them all.
No, the Spring... Whatever. I don't have time to
Spencer,
what
were some of your expectations coming into this?
I was ready to see this movie. I was super excited. Because My Hero has done me no wrong thus far, and so I was going in there, I was super happy about it.
He takes it very personally when an anime doesn't fulfill his needs.
It's just. Stay in your lane with your stories. Don't do weird things with them.
Well,
that's all I'm saying.
Actually, I guess, because they are good story builders and you like the story versions. I mean, I guess you might appreciate action like normal people do, but you are way more about reading into the story and just overthinking it.
Wow. Wait. Thanks.
Like normal people. Like the regular folk outdoors.
A normal person just wants to see Deku deck somebody. You're sitting there. Why did Deku think that jump was the best way to get to that villain with that style of punch?
Well, if he's got a better jump, why?
I don't need to prove my point anymore.
I'm just going to say, you just... Good job. Good job. I'm going to have to learn that trick. but, so your only expectation is that...
both of you so much.
The only expectation you had, if I understand correctly, is just that you've thus far have been, you know, to the moon and back with the current...
Yeah.
Okay, so... In terms of everything that's happening now, you've been satisfied with the series.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, after the film, after seeing the movie, and like I said, I know I've already belabored this point already twice, but third time's a charm. This is a spoiler-filled review. After the film ended, what were your thoughts? Spencer.
Why would they do this to me? What did I do to this
and
person
right
in
off
Japan?
The bat, we get to where his feelings are hurt.
How?
And right,
didn't even just tiptoe into that water. Just dove head first.
I am angry, hear me roar.
Crack through the ice and straight down to the bottom.
The ending of this movie is on par with some television special where someone woke up and it was all just a dream.
This
and
isn't
you were
Dallas,
there,
okay?
And you were there. That's what it was. This was Dallas. And I was so mad.
He's going to hurt somebody in here. It was just one person who woke up from the dream, I want to remind you. Everybody else was alert. It was one of them.
He's got a great point.
Yes, okay. It was still narrowed down. It was, okay. What they did in this movie was exciting, and I was all for it. But then they just snatched it away.
Right off the bat.
Why?
It makes me think.
How?
We're going back to me thinking that you're a villain of some kind. Because if you're talking about what I think you're talking about, where Deku hands over power.
We'll get to that in a second.
Then in my mind, that makes you evil. This is the story of how he becomes the greatest hero.
And his story ended there.
Great. You're a party pooper. You know that? Your aunt's at a picnic.
No, like.
Your aunt's at a picnic.
You are a hole in my jacket.
You are
a windy day.
You are a quirkless aunt at a picnic of supers.
Oh, my gosh. You guys
You make
suck.
Me sad. You know
so,
that?
So here's the thing. I hear you. I hear what you're saying. You're frustrated, just like I had mentioned over the phone.
Uh-huh.
You're frustrated with the way this movie left you.
Yes.
Okay. What about you, Tyler? How did you feel after leaving the theater?
I will admit that one specific detail did kind of hit me because I didn't
see.
I'm
not crazy.
I didn't believe my hero has always had a very stable, grounding sort of narrative.
Uh-huh.
They're always concluding with their stories in a great manner.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of felt like, we didn't mean to go that far. Let's pull back just a pinch.
Mm-hmm. Takesies, backsies.
And
everyone knows there's no takesies, backsies.
But yeah, I wish I had a camera right now.
I know.
I would take
you guys could see his face.
Like, you know when Bilbo was trying to reach for the ring
right,
in that first Lord of the Rings? Man's face is transformed.
Mm.
Like, think a 6-foot-tall gremlin. It is right here in this room.
There is rage.
there is subsurface rage underneath that rage.
Mm.
But all around, I would say this movie, walking out of it, they 100% nailed it again. There was the emotional roller coaster I went through of laughing and crying. There was, of course, like the normal people, I love the action. I don't, you know, he's overwhelmed by the story and the narrative. And me, I was just like, yeah, go punch that bad guy again.
And I have to agree with Tyler. Like, I think this movie, yes, it creates questions. But I think every great movie out there creates a conversation. And that's the marking of a great movie. That's a marking of any great story. You take all the great films that are out there, every single one of them, think about, and I don't know if either of you had ever seen it, but the season finale of The Sopranos.
Yes,
the season
cut to black.
You cut to black right when you think something was about to happen, and we are still talking about it today. There is no doubt about it. You talk about the biggest cliffhangers in TV history, and at least the top three has got to be The Sopranos. And why? Because we are still talking about what the heck happened in those final moments that we did not get a chance to see. And I think this is one of those types of opportunities where, in talking about story, this movie, yes, it is engaging. It is beautiful. I love the design of how they did the final fight sequences and how it wasn't just about the action, but it was about the marrying of powers and the coming together. And essentially the heroes rising to become more than just what they were.
Well, it wasn't just on the hero's end. I mean, we get to really see the villain is the narrative for the villain is all or nothing. He's got to complete his mission or else there's nothing on this planet for him. That's it, you know?
And that's the level of on the opposite side that is required to take him down.
Right.
Which is where the other end goes to make sure that they, you know, they meet and match his power.
Right.
And then to see how the way the whole film, like, wraps up. And yes, it creates a lot of questions. It creates a lot of wondering. It creates a lot of conspiracy theories. It creates a lot of thoughts and questions and unanswered, you know, quandaries. And I think that's what it aimed to do.
because of this movie, I have three theories right off the bat. After watching it the first time, I have three theories.
Okay, we'll talk about theories because I got a couple theories as well. And I think we're going to have to talk about those towards the tail end. But I think that's what great filmmaking is. And I think that's one of the things that we've become synonymous with when it comes to My Hero Academia. I think it's quite obvious that every time we watch any of these shows, there's always a sequence where you're like, oh, well, wait, what does that mean? So what happens next? And you find yourself feeling like you're 12 years old again, and you're watching like a three-part the animated series of Batman all over again. And you're like, wait, Batman can't die? What the heck's going on? And you find yourself stuck. And I think that's exactly what My Hero does. In this film, it creates that opportunity where you're like, oh my gosh, I am like legitimately crying because a kid with grapes on his head is literally out of power and cannot throw anymore. And I'm literally on the verge of just tearing up. What the heck? And in those instances where even the most despicable of heroes finds a redeeming moment in this film, and everybody has a seat at the table. Like everybody from Bakugo to all the way down to like Ochaka to like everybody has an opportunity to shine. And it's incredible.
It's inclusive. It gives every person on the planet loves My Hero Academia. And if you talk to each and every single one of them, there's always one main hero that they're following, that they're in love with. And it's always going to be somebody big and flashy. But at the back of their mind, there's always going to be a second one. You know, somebody who, what can this hero do? For me, All Might. Big, upfront, flashy. That's the one I like. But in the back of my mind, more and more lately, Bakugo, you know, is coming up as he's always on that same mission. And it feels like he's just building bigger and bigger and bigger. So how can he keep up with the power that Deku has? But he is, and he's pushing past.
Yeah.
That's what I loved about All Might, and now that's what I kind of find myself loving about Bakugo.
Yeah, and there's so many awesome characters to fall in love with in this film. I mean, well, not just in this film, but in this series altogether. Mm-hmm. From, you know, like I said, from Deku to Bakugo to even characters that honestly made their first introduction. I don't remember seeing him prior to the series, but he's probably shown up. What's his name? Hawk?
Yeah, I haven't seen him before. I was like, who the heck is this guy?
I'm also not familiar with that character, but instantly I also appreciated him.
Yeah. And a lot of it is I guess it's intros to like what could possibly be coming down the road. Mm-hmm. Like even an opportunity to finally see Endeavor in like current combat, like at the very get-go. Like, oh, Endeavor does fight stuff. Like, I've just always seen him as, like, the dad who's, like, overbearing. And I'm like, okay, cool. And, I mean, he lets loose big time in the beginning sequence of the film.
Yeah.
So, and I think one of the greatest things about this film is that there's already the sense of connectiveness with all these characters. So, you're not finding yourself jumping into something where, like, all right, this is a brand new movie. I gotta understand who all these people are. I got to figure this thing out.
That is something this movie does better than the first movie, is that it gives more time to the other characters besides Deku and All Might to really give a chance to shine. Like, Zero and his tape with Ochaka and, like, the gravity things, like, he was just throwing that left and right. And, like, I was like, he's a really good fighter. Like,
right. I got to jump on that because their teamwork also seems to be growing.
Yeah.
You know, they pulled out a couple of good, lucky shots when we first meet them, and now it seems to be very organized, very detailed, extremely plot-oriented attacks that they're coming up with all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah.
Tape and floating rocks.
Well, yeah, at this point in time, their cohesiveness as a team is just so on point. And yes, mind you, in this film, so essentially the class is sent to this island to defend it and keep it, you know, while their retiring superhero goes into, you know, his final retirement, and they're waiting to bring another superhero in, and they're just there to do the dailies, and somebody comes in who's like super OP with some super OP henchmen.
That question, that right there is like my biggest question of the movie.
Which one?
Is who's the retired hero And where did he retire to? Or she?
To the grave.
Right. Like, your mind goes to the darkest place. This person didn't even show up to give advice. They didn't show up to, you know, so they couldn't, either they couldn't have retired on the island, or retirement is the farm, and we've said goodbye to this hero.
Retirement is...
Well, they took the hero out to pasture, and old Bessie
farm.
Had to be put down. And right.
I mean, I don't know. I was expecting at some point, and that's the other thing my hero does, is you can't just write it in your own head. You can't figure everything out from it, because some old wise dude was going to show up and tell them, this is what you guys need to do. This is the lesson for this. And it never happened. It was truly just them.
Yeah. And the great thing about this particular film is that you don't have to be caught up on the series. You don't have to, like, have seen everything prior to, because obviously you two were able to catch on pretty quickly.
Yeah, I instantly just accepted Hawk. I was like, okay, he's here. I don't know who he is, but yeah, good job, dude. You're a hero.
Yeah, the stuff that sticks out as different isn't too jarring. Like, I feel like the thing that that was the most jarring was at the end of the movie when Endeavor is hugging Todoroki.
I know, really forcing that hug too. You can tell Todoroki is like, don't hug me,
don't touch me. But like,
I guess that's kind of their relationship already. But
it is.
An over the top hug.
Yeah, I was like, oh.
Well, so if you were caught up.
What did I miss in four episodes?
A lot, yeah. Actually, quite a lot. Because in the last four episodes, so during the course of the training for Bakugo and Todoroki, while they're doing all the training to take the test again for their provisional license, they end up doing a big episode, which
I think it's that one.
What, 78?
Yeah,
that's one on one.
They end up doing a lesson where they have to, with a Gang Orca, where he pretty much tells them they have to learn to win the crowd. And so they send, like, all these kids into the arena, and they have to get the kids to like them.
And Bakugo fails.
Horribly. They all fail horribly right
okay,
away.
Good. I'm sorry that I narrowed down on Bakugo then.
I mean, no. Bakugo and likable don't really go bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I like him.
Yeah, but we don't have to deal with him.
If you met Bakugo in person, you would not stick around. You wouldn't hang out with him.
I think I would have to be like, all right, this guy's a short fuse. He's like Spencer, but, you know, Asian. And
with action.
And with capability.
And this is the story of how Eddie died. Because he made the wrong person angry. The person who can literally ignite anything with his hand.
Exactly.
I got to agree with him on that. See? You would just say the first thing that he doesn't want to hear at 7 a.m. in the morning, and then you get blasted.
100%.
I hope you have a quirk of your own there, buddy.
No, but in this episode, they end up working together, and Todoroki ends up figuring out something, and like his dad is actually there, and his dad is there to sit and talk to All Might and figure out like the whole, like, why he's still not the number one hero. And
I thought he was by default.
Well, by default,
but he doesn't accept it himself.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you wouldn't be able to accept something like that.
He totally would.
No, well, like,
by default.
I don't know. I don't know, Spence. I don't think you would. I feel like you'd be like, I didn't earn this. Yeah,
and that's
this movie's not canon.
How he feels, you know.
But I honestly feel like in that sequence, like there's a little bit of like a connecting between the dad and Todoroki, between Endeavor and Todoroki. And it's not like an instant connection, like they're like all, you know, lovey-dovey family or whatever, but it creates this connection where Todoroki is now recognizing that Endeavor is starting to want to respect and appreciate whatever his choices are after the conversation that he has with All Might. So that could lead to the whole, like, them actually having that kind of interaction after, you know, the events of everything in the film, it makes that make a little bit more sense.
Okay.
So,
okay.
See what you guys are missing out on.
Not that, like, it's
missing
slowly
out.
Moving.
Well,
into
even
that
then,
direction.
Like I said before, it's ever evolving, right? Like, we're not just watching them grow physically stronger. We're watching them emotionally grow. We're watching them gain knowledge, wisdom, experience. And as they're doing that, obviously the relationships in their lives are going to grow as well. And unfortunately be cut off. And that's where I thought Todoroki and his father were headed. But yeah. Apparently I was wrong. Another one that I guessed wrong.
So in the movie, Endeavor has a massive scar on his face. Is that talked about yet or no?
I don't know.
I did notice that as well, and I didn't see it in previous episodes.
I don't remember seeing it.
The last time I see it in Endeavor, he didn't have that.
I don't remember it in that last episode he was in, that one. But, yeah. That's an interesting. That's another. Throw it on the pile. Throw it on the conspiracy theory pile.
Or maybe he's just getting into fights off screen that are so massive and, you know, trying to take over the number one spot that now he's actually getting beat up.
True. Very true.
That was my fourth theory. That's fourth and the weakest of all my theories.
I think that's an old episode.
This is the one you said.
It might have been the one before that.
Gosh.
Oh, no. That's actually... Oh, look, there's his face.
Yeah, keep talking while I look this up.
Oh, no, that is the right episode. Yeah. I feel like one of the great things to really highlight in this film, it's interesting to take the opportunity where they create a villain that is almost, if not more so, akin to what we've seen for All for One, as opposed to previous villains, which... I mean, you had, what's his name, Overhaul, and you still have Shigaraki.
Well, but I feel like they're the small players, right? Always. Yeah. They're not, they're the gangsters of the My Hero universe.
Yeah.
But they're not the actual threat. Nomu, a mindless monster that can be dropped anywhere with very little to no thought process, will do exactly the amount of damage or whatever you tell it to do.
Is that why he wants you to dress up as Nomu?
Yes.
No, that's the reason.
Yes. And then I could beat him up while dressed as All Might.
That's exactly what I said earlier. That's the whole reason.
So I'm glad we're letting this, we're airing this out here. Mm-hmm. It'll live for infinite, for like X amount of days online. So.
That's right. And then, so we have the Nomu, and then now we're taking a step further past that, where Nomu were already so dangerous on their own. We were watching gunfire wasn't enough against them. Heroes weren't enough against them. But now we're going to where even the what we consider to be the ultimate bad guy is now just something that can also be
fabricated, yeah,
reproduced, fabricated. And if that's the case, you know, how far are the villains willing to go? And earlier we said it's all or nothing for them.
Yeah.
If it's all or nothing for them, how much further could they, are they going to push?
Yeah. And I think that's a great place to kind of highlight in the film in terms of knowing, yes, this story may or may not be canon. However, its implications in the overall universe are still just the same in terms of villains and the type of the type of evil they have to face in the series itself. I mean, right now you got some dude who's like this weird magician kind of guy who's, he's not really the main villain. However, this was one of the unique things in the series. This villain, Nine, is actually hinted at in the last two episodes.
Which, right off the bat, would make me consider the movie canon.
Which is what, we'll talk about this. I'm looking at Spencer, and Spencer's like, I don't know.
The anger, the rage.
The rage.
Like, the do fury. They even know their own product or something?
Of course they know. They got nerds like us talking about it. They know exactly what they're doing.
They have probably like six rooms full of six nerds arguing over each character and what they're about to do in the next 10 years.
You hear that? The man knows.
And here you are rage-induced because it may or may not be canon.
Now, so everything about the film, obviously, if you've seen the series, the film's great. Like, the action sequences, everything from the beginning, the way they have, it's got your basic three-act hero structure. Well, technically five-act, but the basic beats are hit. You know, you're establishing the heroes. The heroes come upon an immovable object. They face it. They struggle at first. Then they come back to defeat it in an all-out battle and, you know, ultimately win. To whatever means. That's your basic structure of just about almost every film out there, especially this one. This one hits a lot of those regular beats. However, the one thing I really do want to kind of want to hit on is that last act of the film, which is the part where Spencer begins to lose his cookies and starts getting frustrated. as we get to the tail end of the film, there's this massive, like, strategic, strategy that gets implemented and separates everybody. And I kind of want to talk about how each of them get taken down, because I have to say, Chimera was probably the funnest one to watch.
Mm-hmm. Like, if I could just go on a little bit of a tangent with when it comes to Chimera, oh my God, what an awesome, just amazing villain. They took Greek mythology, pulled it into the series, and decided, you know what? In Greek mythology, this monster was the direct descendant of Typhoon. Let's make it this just beast of a creature that just destroys the class. And I absolutely fell in love. I want more Chimera in every episode. I want that to be the level of fight they have to go through. I want to see All Might fight Chimera.
Yeah, Chimera was so cool in seeing how his abilities, I mean, to be quite honest, we never really saw the full extent of his abilities. We just continued to see him grow and become more and more massive and continue to, like, gain strength. It almost seemed like he had some kind of, you know, all for one.
Right, a separate energy source.
Or one for all power, sorry. Yeah.
Well, and then even in the theater, right, you know, I was one of the kids that made noise. When I seen him grow, I was like, why would you ever shrink? Like, if you have that ability to be that
size. You got to fit through doors, Tyler.
No, you knock down the building so you can get whatever's in there, I guess.
Then how are you supposed to go into Dairy Queen?
You knock it over, and then you eat the stuff from... I mean, his stomach's got to be huge. He could just eat the Dairy Queen, I mean, guess.
This is really bad for repeated visits to Dairy Queen.
Exactly.
You
got to
find a new Dairy Queen. They're going to rebuild. It's Dairy Queen. They're not going anywhere.
Get it every 6 months when they rebuild. He's coming back! And just realize, just open the roof. We'll make a hole.
They just had, like, this retractable roof.
Exactly.
Right. They start giving in to him. Like, here, we made this giant bowl on our roof for you. It's filled with all the delicious treats you could possibly want. Go ahead and take that. Leave our building.
He's got to be one of the interesting ones. I think the, what was her name? The one with the hair?
I don't know.
She was the by far the least of all the villains that had any interest. I didn't know why she was there. For Chimera, they put out that he is monstrous looking. He is not a pretty sight. So he has a reason. And then the very other forgettable character that they forgot about was the guy who wrapped people. They just straight up left him in a room somewhere locked up.
He was in the movie for about a minute, and then he was gone. And mind you, I think the biggest indication that he was not going to last long was he thought he had Bakugo beaten. And I'm like,
100% right there. Every time we've seen somebody think that Bakugo is done, he slipped somebody else a gauntlet. He has put some other sneaky sort of trick into mind. He's holding back some sort of power. He is, you know. So every time you underestimate Bakugo, now we're catching another trend. If you underestimate Bakugo, you're done in the first minute.
Her name was Slice, by the way.
Slice.
Yeah.
Very original, because she could cut things too, by the way, folks. So.
With her hair. She could cut things with her hair. But I think the makings of those three, I mean, mind you, like those two more so than the three, but the making of those three made a really good like henchman group for the main person, which, I mean, honestly, coming about to like what makes a notable villain is your ability to empathize with it. And you take, like, what are some of the greatest, you know, empathetic villains that are out there? I mean, obviously, with the most recent iterations of Marvel, you look at Loki, you look at Thanos. I mean, you look at villains who have really been able to exceed the box that we usually put villains in, and we're like, all right, all they are is just bad, evil, and they want to take over the world. Like, case in point, Dr. Robotnik in the recent Sonic movie. Like, all he wanted to do was just dissect Sonic and use him for power.
Right.
There was nothing else to it.
I see nothing wrong with that, by the way.
But in terms of, like, memorability, like, you'll probably remember more so the video game Dr. Robotnik than you will the movie version.
See, I gotta disagree with you on this one. I felt like I couldn't sympathize with their goals, their strategies, or anything. It was their pure raw passion for what they wanted. I mean,
but
we talked about how forgettable the first two characters were, Mummy and Slice. Yeah, they're very, can't remember their names. I almost don't even really care, but it's that will to fight, push for fight. So I don't understand what they're fighting for, what exactly it is that they're talking about, because it looks like they just want a scorched earth. In that little view that we get, that's all they want. That's just destruction. There's nothing good there. For me, it was seeing that passion to continuously fight and drive, you know, even as he's being mummy, even as he's being pushed back by the heroes from 1A, he's still coming at them with everything he's got.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Bakugo is not a small child that's non-threatening. He is lethal, dangerous. He wants to be called Mr. Murder Kill or something.
Yeah.
Not somebody to be taken lightly. So fighting him alone means this guy had to have some sort of drive, you know?
Yeah.
Memorable and, or not.
And I think that's the part that is the memorable aspect, because you're obviously, you know, lively about it in terms of talking about it. It's something that made an impression. You could empathize with the character, not sympathize, because sympathy is just, that's a whole nother ballgame. Right. But it being empathetic to him, I think that's where, like, you're kind of proving my point in terms of...
Oh, maybe. Maybe. If the fight is there in the person, the spirit is to overcome all odds for whatever you got to do. I am not rooting for the villains, by the way. Like, I don't want it to come across like that at all. So, but...
No, but I have to agree with that, though. Like, the main villain, even Nine... Like, come to realize, yes, he's been a jerk this entire time because he's felt like he was invincible up until he started realizing he wasn't. And you started learning, oh, he's dying. There are things within him that are killing him slowly. And you begin to hear his backstory and you begin to hear him talk. And like you stated, in that last act, he goes full blown, like all out. And he even says, you know, I am not going to leave anything left on the table. I am going with everything I got. And you have to recognize that it's like, that's passion. That's drive. That's
right.
Completely something that I can have a relation to in terms of I've been there. I know that that's a connecting point.
I'm realizing now I'm kind of stupid because, yeah, I am agreeing with you because, yeah, that's what I'm going for then, is the passion there is what the drive is. So no matter what, I guess, the outcome is for Deku and Bakugo, it's saving everybody. For Nine, it was destroying, just literally having a scorched earth. It was literally that passion there to just push back.
And like, well, to at least be there for it, like to actually be alive, to actually make it that far to see his full potential.
Right.
Like, you could see it almost began to boil down to he just wanted to exist. And these two teenagers were all that was keeping him from existing in his mind. Much like with Thanos, everything that he saw was right in his mind. And he wanted it. Not that I'm sympathizing with Thanos. Genocide is never the answer.
We are not. In no way does this group endorse villains. I cannot make that any more clear. We're not on the side of the bad guys.
But with
it, Spencer.
Exactly.
I've literally said nothing for like the last 5 minutes about villains.
But if your eyebrows could talk, they were just so... Just like that. Just like that.
Okay.
The spokesperson for Thanos. Spencer.
But even in Thanos' ability to express that, he believes this wholeheartedly. Like, this is his passion, to believe that the balance of scales for the entire world can be fixed if he does this one thing for the survival of the universe. In his mind, he is totally 100% sold on this. And you almost have to be like, wow, like, he really believes this. This is something he's totally sold out on. Like,
now, just a throw-off question for both of you. Would you consider that crazy?
What's that?
So somebody comes and they have this...
He's asking us if genocide is crazy. Okay.
No. It is. It absolutely is. In his mind, he believes it's right, and it could possibly fix things. Even throughout the course of the movie, at the very beginning, we see that him having snapped away half of the universe is kind of helping the planet Earth. You know, nature is taking over a little bit more. There's not so many people, so their wills... and life growing again everywhere. Is it crazy for somebody to believe that they could fix something in that manner? Is that the idea?
I would say it's more lazy.
I would say yes.
Yes.
For the simple fact that sanity is being open to all opinions and unequivocally proving that yours is still right. and he was not even open to hearing anybody's suggestions.
So you both just also did the same thing. You agreed. Spencer said that was lazy.
Well, he just said that was lazy.
Yeah, he went the shortest, quickest route possible.
Yeah, because he looked at a problem and was like, there's too many people. Half the people. Done. Yeah. Like, instead of like, well, what could we do to fix this besides just get rid of half the people? Maybe make a second planet, move half the people there. There's tons of
half the people of the universe on one planet.
On, like, over.
Over.
The entire space. Uh-huh. Not just one planet. That doesn't make any sense.
Like, all right, we're putting 2.7 quadrillion people and
we're moving you all to a Dyson sphere.
Everybody. You'll be shoulder length with everybody, shoulder height to everybody. Just move along. If anybody has to go bathroom, just
don't
hold it. Yeah.
So what do you believe?
I completely agree with both of you, actually. You both said it's a lazy idea to assume that you are the person that's right in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Spencer.
If we had an issue right now, I would come to both of you and say, okay, here's the problem on the table. How do we fix it? And you both throw out ideas. I throw out my idea. I would think trial and error would also come into play, right?
Oh, yeah.
Thanos really just says it's a simple calculus without even, no trial or error
He uses a small, and this is a little bit of a sidetrack, but he uses a small controlled test to determine whether or not if it's right or not with his own planet, and thinking because his own planet failed, it's going to fail everywhere else if he doesn't do anything about it. So it's kind of a very...
That's not how you do science.
Well, that's what he said.
You don't do it
once. Right. He's like, it didn't work in my home, so it's not going to work anywhere in Sacramento.
But then we apply that to my hero, and that's exactly my point, is that these villains are insane. Their idea of fixing...
Well, they're not well.
Well, no, yeah. But their idea of fixing things is one common goal of pretty much scorched earth. That the heroes can't protect people. That's Shigaraki's main goal is just to show everybody that All Might cannot protect you. All Might cannot say why would you want people to feel like they have to be fearful and weak all the time? Why wouldn't you want to empower others?
Yes and no. I mean, and that just goes to like unique story writing, like which is a complete separation between like other villains and other stories and whatnot and what my hero has done, which my hero has worked to create unique villains to where they're not just seeking power, but they're also seeking a domination of sort. Like whether if it's over the human race, whether if it's over a certain portion of that human race,
I don't think it's domination. It seems to be more and more just chaos and destruction, right? I mean, Nine says it the best in the movie, is it'll be the most powerful that rule.
Mm-hmm.
If we break it down to its bare minimum, what Shigaraki is after is exactly that. If you don't have anybody else to push back, you're saying that whoever is the most powerful will be on top. Mm-hmm. Always. And that person is going to be who creates the rules. That to me is an insane idea. That's something where you're just leading up to more and more chaos, and they're not thinking or considering. Shigaraki is definitely not considering. He caught Nine at a great point in which he had the upper hand. But if Nine had caught him, the tables would have been completely turned. Shigaraki would have had no fight against Nine whatsoever. And so I don't think he's thinking of it as being on top of the pile. I think he's thinking of it as blowing the pile up.
Maybe. That's definitely one way to look at it. I think there's something to that. But going back to what we were talking about with the actual ending of the film,
mm-hmm.
and this is where we're going to have some fun with Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
So the unique portion of the film that Spencer has been being very negative towards is that ultimately Nine has exhausted every amount of his power and is using it currently to defeat Deku and Kachan in the last moments of their, you know, of the fight.
It is an amazing show of power because he is just overwhelming everything that is tossed at him.
Yep.
Even the other heroes are slightly tossing what they can at him, and it's just overwhelming.
Yep. He is completely overpowering every single thing around him. Even the entire island that they are fighting on is completely engulfed in his power. And then Deku turns to Kachan and says, hey, I got a crazy idea. And long story short, and I'm already watching Spencer cringe in the corner.
Yeah. The rage begins now.
Midoriya decides to transfer the majority of the One For All power to Kachan. And then they ultimately both begin to operate in this One For All power where they both look like something out of Dragon Ball.
Yeah, they did, and it was amazing. So.
The animation in that scope where they're both powering up using that ability was so intense that I felt like the kid that was in front of me that kept getting up and making noise, I wanted to just Detroit Smash. Like, I was so intense and just knock him back into his seat.
Now, I've never done that, Spencer.
Yet.
But I want to point out, I would like to point out to everybody listening, I did not do that.
Yet.
So everybody's talking about like it being done or not done. I did not do that. But that animation and the score going with it at the same time.
Oh, man.
Such a fired
Mighty
up mood.
Plus You is an amazing song. That's the name of that song.
I'm listening to that, it during my workout tomorrow.
That entire sequence, it's more focused because obviously there's immense power that's being put on display during that last sequence, but that whole sequence isn't playing for power, which is exactly what we were just talking about when it came to the villains. It wasn't so much as a drive to showcase power, but it was a display of the marrying of two powers to become one seamless fighting machine, so to speak. In this like beautiful display of light and color.
Can we take a minute to also talk about like Bakugo and Deku and how they are? Sometimes it's like they're reading each other's minds.
You know,
like throughout this whole movie, we've seen the shift from Bakugo going from the bully to just dealing with the fact that Deku exists. And now, I don't know if I want to say he respects him, but he definitely.
More of like tolerates.
a further tolerate than what he was doing before, though. You know, we're starting to hint at respect for Deku. And just seeing them work together so flawlessly, you know, and Bakugo showcased so much power right there. He blasts himself away, grabs Deku, spins himself in a blast, and then tosses Deku right back. And I was just thinking, you just used a human body as a cannon, and it took you 1.2 seconds to think to do it.
Yeah, and it's all like seamless. It's all beautiful, beautifully done. Mm-hmm. The way the choreography and the way the story unfolds with the subtle music that's in the background of that entire scene, it just makes it so unique
the scene I cried during.
By the way, I believe it. I was the same way. Like I had to go home and watch every bootleg copy I could find of that final scene just to read. I don't even care if it was Japanese subs. Like I will watch it. Over and over, right. And totally get lost in it because that whole final sequence is so beautifully done.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the fear right there, since we've already spoiled it, was I believed listening to that music and then seeing how the fight was going, I honestly 110% believed that we were seeing the end of Deku.
Well, yeah.
in my head, I was like, I pray that this is non-canon. I'm praying that this is non-canon because this is supposed to be the story of how he becomes the number one hero. I don't think we hit that spot yet. So I'm praying this is non-canon. And then, but with that, I was like, if this is canon, we're definitely saying goodbye to Deku right now.
Well, and ultimately, I mean, you see in the same way that All Might fought All For One in how, like, in those final sequences, you begin to see that flame and you begin to see it beginning to smolder down and grow weaker and weaker until it eventually just goes off into a wisp of smoke. And you see that exact same thing with Deku.
And he even says goodbye, One For All. And, like, right there, I was like... Well,
and even before that, his last punch, he says it the entire time. He's like, if this is my last one, then let this be... What does he call that? What does he call that punch?
What, the final smash?
The final smash.
Yeah, the final smash.
And, like, that just, like, sent me, like... Yeah. I got goosebumps throughout the entire thing because I'm like, this might be it.
Yeah, no, and I was right there. That's exactly what I felt. Like, I was like, no way. no, what are you guys doing here? And you know, but
no. Hold on, you got to do it right. That's not what you're doing. No,
no, oh, yeah. Oh, no.
This can't be.
I want to paint the perfect picture for you guys. Tears. There's a little bit of snot coming out of the right nostril, and I'm just like,
I had no, kids around me. There was kids around me, and I'm like, I cannot have tears when I walk out of here. No, I cannot have tears.
Yeah,
but so it's beautiful. Nevertheless,
can we have a moment to cry after this? Like, just take a few minutes and cry.
We'll pull up the bootleg copy again and watch it one more time through,
just to get all of that out of my system.
And then, so as Tyler mentioned, he finally says his last goodbye to One For All, and we see the flame go out in a wisp of smoke. And so you think it's done. It's over. And you don't see where Ka-Chan lands. You don't see anything else. You just know the villain is gone. Like, he got blasted to the clear other side of the island.
And that was an amazing double, like, attack between, again, Deku.
It was
with
a double
Kamehameha. Yeah, Bakugo basically did a fire blast Kamehameha.
Yeah.
And you just see that double attack, and you're like, yeah. Oh, dude, if there's anything left, it's dust.
Yeah. And so the other heroes finally arrive to the island. They've got the message like hours later after the fight's done, and All Might is there next to Deku. And in that last scene where like Deku's like, I'm sorry, you know, I'm so sorry, but I had to give it to him. I had to, you know, give him the, you know, the power so that way we could defeat him. And that whole sequence too as well was like super emotionally charged, because it's like, oh my gosh, they're actually doing it. Like, yep. You're watching the final send-off to Midoriya,
yep.
And the character of Deku and his usage of the One For All power. And you see it, and he's crying, and he's like, and All Might's in tears as well. He's like, I don't regret it a single bit, and you had to do whatever you had to do. And then Ka-Chan finally, like, just faints. And I don't know if he was meant to, like, I don't know if he died or if he just fainted. I don't know what happened.
Wait, who are we talking about?
Talking about Deku. Like, when he passed out.
Like, oh. No, he just passed out.
Yeah, that's what I did.
I don't know.
So, well, from there, though, it becomes obvious that, you mind if I go forward with
it? Go for it, by all means.
So, it becomes obvious that Deku does not lose All For One, and then we hear this voiceover after this huge emotional thing that made everybody cry and not at all look like their face was liquefied.
It's true.
That Ka-Chan doesn't even remember having the ability.
Yeah. That Deku says that Ka-Chan doesn't remember it,
right.
Nor does he have it still.
So this is the first theory, and I think you and I share this.
Yep.
Do you want to go for
I'll go ahead and do the first half of it. So I feel like Ka-Chan, who has been this type of low-key to himself, knows how to scheme, has that kind of thing, you know, within himself to be capable of it, I feel like he does remember, but he's not going to admit it to anybody that he had to share the spotlight with Deku. And I don't think he's going to share whether or not he actually doesn't have it.
And I completely agree. I think it is going to resurface, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is going to become, it's going to be at a moment where they're all down, they're all low, cards are off the table again. And then Bakugo comes out of nowhere with, you know, Detroit, I don't know, bullet grenade.
Detroit detonation blast,
yeah,
or something.
Detroit detonation, and then just wrecks whatever villain is in the way.
Yeah.
I do have a quick second theory about that whole moment, though, where Deku is confessing to All Might that he no longer has One For All. I think All Might still has One For All. I think it's very obvious that he touches both boys and he kind of has some sort of sense to it, right? He still has some sort of connection to One For All.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're fully done seeing All Might use the power of One For All.
Well, I think that leads to, like, well, the fact that Eri is now in safer hands. So Eri, the little girl with the horn from Overhaul. Mm-hmm. And
again, I know who you're talking about. I just don't know what exactly she does.
So her ability. So during the course of her rescue from Overhaul, you find out she has the ability to turn back time within somebody's body. So essentially, it could be used to either turn somebody back, like all the way to a baby, or like essentially for what she uses it for. She helps Deku heal his arms as he's fighting Overhaul. So he's going all out with One for All and fighting Overhaul, but at the same time he's destroying his arms, and while he has Eri strapped to him, she's using her power to turn back the time to heal his hands to when they weren't broken. Wow. And so the thought is that much like so spoiler alert, I'm about to blow it for both of y'all. So what's the Mr. Nidai ends up dying.
Yeah.
Lemillion.
Muriel.
he loses his powers completely. So he doesn't have any powers at all. So Midoriya is trying to figure out a way to get Eri to kind of come to a sense of normalcy, because she's still in shock, to maybe see if she could figure out a way to help him get his powers back. And in the same mindset, maybe eventually help All Might before he gave One for All away.
Okay, so then
there's an opportunity there, possibly.
I feel like this movie is alluding to it, because the very first thing I thought when I seen that is, I was like, oh, that's the second theory I have, is that we're not done seeing All Might as All Might.
Well, and I think you also hit on one earlier, in that because of Nine, and because the doctor who helped create Nine is the same doctor who told Deku that he doesn't have a quirk.
Right.
There's already a connecting point there. You can't fabricate that. That's already canon. Like, he is the same doctor.
Right.
Maybe there's an opportunity to maybe use that same technology to help the heroes that have lost quirks, or even maybe not able to, you know, have their full potential for their current one.
Are you guys imagining like a sort of end game scene when it comes to My Hero, where the doctor is sort of like Doctor Strange, and all of a sudden all the heroes that have either died or had their powers taken away, all of a sudden he shows up and is like, wham, now you're all back and just up
on
and
your left.
Oh my gosh. Another theory that I had, since we're talking about theories, because your moment of rage, I'll let it subside for a second.
There's no point.
There's always a point. Another theory I have is that one of the things that Nine says because he has the ability to scan people for their quirks, one of the things he says about Deku is, oh, well, it looks like there might be two quirks in this one.
No, I would like to point out that he actually says there are multiple quirks. He doesn't give an exact number. He says the word multiple.
Hmm.
Because the very first thing I thought of is exactly what I think you're thinking right now then.
That Deku has a non-activated quirk?
That Deku either has a non-activated quirk, or it's just he doesn't know how to turn it on yet. Just like All for One, or One for All.
Yeah.
When he got it, he goes the laziest, dumbest route. I need to use it exactly where I need to use it, right? Pushing the energy into his finger and then shooting it. That's what I got to do. Instead of using it as a full body quirk. So what else could he be holding back that we don't know about? You know what I mean? Physically, he's always held himself back. We know that he's an overthinker, but could it be something to do with his mind? Can he have some sort of mental telepathic ability that is not beknownst to him? That he's just not aware that he can activate.
That's a good point. That's definitely one of those ones, because I was just immediately thinking, like, all right, well then what does that mean? Like, does that mean that exactly what we're just talking about, or are they just talking about how One for All is just so unique that it hasn't been figured out, or like there's different ways you can
figure it
out.
And they can spin it however they want, honestly, and we're all going to eat it up because it's My Hero. We're 100%. Not going to argue with it.
Spencer. Why did you not like the way that movie ended? Why did you not catch on to the feels and enjoy the heroic goodness that it developed and dished out?
It just felt like a take back. I don't know. It just... They gave Bakugo something and then they snatched it back. That could have been a really interesting dynamic.
But you keep acting like it's... Like, that's the certain thing that happened.
Now, real quick, let me... I want to throw the theoretical at you. What if he actually doesn't have it? What if it is actually gone? You know?
I doubt it.
Well, no. I mean, this is a hypothetical entirely. He doesn't have it. And this story, then what does that mean to you?
It means that somebody hasn't finished writing the story yet, because I feel like the way this particular anime has gone, they have taken advantage of every... Like, they are not lazy, right, since that seems to be the name of the evening. They are not lazy because they take every opportunity to highlight the many parts of the story and make them vital portions as the story continues. Everything from a simple hug to the way, a gauntlet fits on somebody's hand to, like, everything plays a role. I don't think that they would put something in there that's as monumental as sharing one for all, only to say, well, now he doesn't have it, and there's got to be more. Like, or, and that's it. I mean, like, they take it away and that's it. Okay, I don't know if that's something they're capable of. Now, hypothetically, if they are, and that's the case, it still was a good movie.
Right.
And I would still enjoy it again, but I would feel like there's still, like, even if it's been, like, proven all sense of the way, I would still feel like there has to be more.
That's a satisfying answer. Back to making you cry.
Oh, I'm done with you.
Like, because so
you are just, like, stirring things up that you don't even believe in.
I do believe in.
Well, no.
Why do you think we're talking about it?
So, are you 100% in the headspace that this is just non-canon, or that didn't happen at all? Like, well, for Bakugo.
What Funimation said?
Did you look it up yourself?
So you're telling me you're just lying to me?
I'm not telling you I'm lying. That's what Funimation stated. However, between him and what the creators have said and what other people have said, there's always the in-between. Like, literally, Kevin Feige didn't know Spider-Man and Venom were going to be a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe until What's-Her-Name said something at the Sony press conference. And it's like, he's like, oh, okay, yeah, right, we're doing that.
Right there is the problem we're running into right now in nerd culture, right? Everybody's trying to build up the story. Mm-hmm. So as they build it up, it becomes evolving. You can't know the end if you don't have all the players right off the beginning, you know? So every time they build something up, right now they're saying this movie is non-canon. It does not happen in the show. And then all of a sudden, you know, two seasons down the road, they come across, holy moly, cannot fight this villain. And then Bakugo pulls out the power, and they're like, you know, we're all like, whoa, that wasn't canon. And they're like, oh,
yeah,
never mind. It was.
Yeah.
It was totally canon.
I mean, take for instance.
I'd be so angry.
Take for instance. Because it's never in the hands of just the creators. If the creators are smart, they will leave that into the hands of the fans who keep pushing the popularity of it. Case in point, mid-early 90s, we had one of the most unique, yet at the time, non-canon stories in DC history, also known as The Killing Joke.
An amazing, amazing comic book.
Extremely, you know, niche. Alan Moore was phenomenal. It's a great story. And ultimately, the way it ended left a lot of questions. And ultimately, was divulged that the story was not canon. Well, needless to say, a year or two later, you find Barbara Gordon still in a wheelchair. And now the Oracle for Batman, and you're like, well, wait, but when did she get shot? Because the last time I saw her get shot in was in The Killing Joke, and that was technically supposed to be not canon. Well, popularity grew so much for that particular comic that they ended up, or that graphic novel, that they decided to make it canon after the fact, and thus making it part of the entire story.
Well, they're a bunch of cowards then.
They're a bunch of rich cowards for one, but number.
But that means we live in an amazing time where they're listening to the fans.
Yeah.
When we can get what we want, and
but fans are stupid sometimes and shouldn't always be given what they
you
want.
You are a fan, so you are stupid sometimes. You want to, you know what?
I will unhook your microphone. Like, Eddie, why is this episode still on?
I'm gonna take a phone call. You guys go finish. I'm gonna.
No. Right now, we okay. So. You are Oscar the Grouch, okay? You want to be upset. And you know what? I'm going to let you be upset. Go ahead. But me personally, I want to tell every director out there, every screenwriter, every story writer, keep going. Keep listening to me. I will keep posting things on Facebook. Tell me whether I'm right or wrong about my theories. I want to see All Might come back. I can't wait to see Falcon and the Winter Soldier. These are all things I've wanted. I even told you way back before Civil War that the movie I wanted was a buddy cop movie between Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Well, Captain America was in that one too when you originally pitched it, but he's dead now because he's an old man.
Wow.
You were just so negative.
I mean,
and like, you know what? Go ahead and be Oscar the Grouch. I will keep pushing positive energy.
Well, wrapping this thing up because we've gone for a little while. So, we have. Wrapping this thing up, obviously this film, it's probably not going to be in theaters by the time this episode debuts, but you do have a chance to check it out on digital as well as probably in the final hours of it being posted on the day, which is Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But going around the table, we'll go ahead and start with Tyler. We usually do two forms of how to rate the film. We usually say whether it passes or fails as a film itself. Like, does it pass as a film? Does it have a complete story? Does it give you unique characters? And how many monocles out of five do you give it? So,
I would definitely, this movie definitely passes. The storytelling was way above and beyond what I even wanted for it, especially after the first movie. They could have just put a lot of, you know, flashy lights, throw in more of the character development, and I would have been perfectly happy with that, but this was a lot more than what I even wanted, so definitely a pass. Monocles, isn't that like the one glass thing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so is this talking about how highbrow the movie is?
How good it is out of five. Think of it like a star review, but we use monocles.
Monocles, yeah. Okay. You know what? It makes me seem a little easy when it comes to movies, but I would say five.
Okay.
Easily, like, if you haven't seen it, get to the theater. I know they put up the dumbest times, and they make it so difficult on everybody, and I apologize.
Why are you apologizing? You didn't pick any of the times.
I know I didn't, because I wouldn't have. I would have given everybody a fair shot to see it. But definitely get to the theater, because it's something you want to experience while it's big and it's loud in the theaters.
Yeah,
get
very
there,
true.
See it.
What about you, Spence? Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles? Here we go.
The movie passes for me.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. The anger streak has broken.
I didn't say that.
Oy.
Okay, long shot.
Just coming back with monocles, people. Get ready.
I might not be happy now, but I never forget anything. Oh, wrongs, man.
Okay. Take it easy there.
It's a great movie with the problematic ending of whether this is important at all or whether it happened at all. Who knows? Who cares? It's over. Done with. But, you know, had fun for the most part. So overall, I guess I'll give it a 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5. All that huff and puff, and you still give it a 4 out of 5. You don't have to answer that. It's fine.
No, I will answer that.
That's the Grinch's heart growing 3 times the size after realizing how great the movie actually was.
He had a dump it to crump it moment there. Here we go.
Goodbye, folks. This will be the last time you mace. If my family's listening, it was Spencer. Love you guys.
There we go. Irrefutable evidence. The film passes for me. It definitely was exactly what I expected. It definitely fulfilled all of those expectations that I had, and then some. And I had a great time going in. I had a great time coming out. In terms of monocles, I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 as well. I definitely loved everything about the movie. It does give me a few more questions than I had anticipated, but that created this conversation here. And I am all the more thankful for that, because all the more reason to make Spencer angry. So,
does not look happy in here, by the way, folks.
But that wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 and on Instagram at filmlosophy101 as well. You can also check out all of our episodes on our website at filmlosophers.com. One quick thing, too, we do want to remind you, we are having our trivia night this upcoming Monday, March 9th.
Yes.
Starting at 6:30, it is The Office themed. So if you haven't signed up yet, go to the website, go to our Facebook page. We got the link posted at the top, and sign up with your team. But yeah, this was fun. Tyler, thanks for coming out. It's great.
Plus Ultra, this was awesome. Just watching Spencer cry and having a good conversation with you, Eddie.
Cry about it.
This was absolutely wonderful. So, from all, you know, I have somebody who counts all those times we say stupid on this episode.
Why?
Really? I don't.
They have nothing.
They mostly come from Spencer, don't they?
No.
Mostly.
I'm willing to bet right now that he has more than half of the stupid comments.
I believe this episode was ended because it's gone on for too dang long.
All right. From all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Tyler.
Class dismissed.